Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is March the 4th, and we are in Parshas Va'era on page 334. And we're up to the sixth plague, the plague of Shechin of boils. Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe, Vayomer Hashem Moshe va'Aaron, Hashem said to Moshe and to Aaron, Kechu lachem melocha afneichem, take for yourselves the full hand handfuls. It's a little redundant in English. Full handfuls. Meaning you should each fill up both your hands completely. Piach kivshan, with ashes from an oven. Uzrakomo shehashamayim, and Moshe should throw it to the heavens. Leinei Faro, in front of the eyes of Faro. V'hoyali avak, it will turn into dust. Al kol eretz Mitzrayim, upon all the land of Egypt. V'hoya al ha'adam ve'al ha'behema, and it will be on the people, on the animals. Lishchin poreach avabuos, for boils. I'm going to look at erupting into blisters. Okay, poreach means to flower. Normally with a flower you say it's poreach, a perach. But it's something which starts as one thing and then it erupts is a good word. It blossoms. Here it doesn't blossom in a good way, it blossoms in a bad way. And avabuos means blisters. So it would be boils that then burst into blisters. B'chol eretz Mitzrayim, and all the land of Egypt. Vayikhu es piach hakivshan, and they took the ashes of the oven. Vayamdu lifnei Faro, and they stood in front of Paro. Vayizrok oso Moshe hashamayma, and Moshe threw it to the heavens. Vayihi shchina babuos, and there was boils that were blistering, poreach, that were bursting open, ba'adam v'abahema, on the man and on the beast. And the chartum and the sorcerers could not stand in front of Moshe because of the boils. For the boils were on the sorcerers and in all of Egypt. Hashem strengthened the heart of Paro. Until now, Paro was hardening his own heart. Here, for the first time, Hashem actually strengthens the heart of Paro. Hashem had told Moshe he was going to strengthen the heart of Pharaoh. We discussed back then why that was an acceptable thing for Hashem to do, given his rules of free will. But this is the first time it actually happened. V'lo shama aleihem, and he did not listen to them. Pharaoh did not listen to them. Kasher diber Hashem Moshe, as Hashem had spoken to Moshe. These boils were very, very painful, and they were very difficult to treat. We think of a blister, so a blister generally happens when a person's skin gets rubbed too much in one place, like on a foot, you know, if a shoe doesn't fit properly.
Or a burn,
something like that, and then it hurts. The skin wears away, and it's painful. This was more than that. This was there's different ways that it's expressed in the various midrashim, but either it was like a pimple that was either moist on the inside and hard on the outside, or hard on the inside and moist on the hard on the inside and moist on the outside, some sort of combination of moisture and dryness that was very difficult to treat. That when they try to go to use some sort of medicines, some sort of lotions or creams that are normally effective for this sort of ailment, they couldn't get it right because the skin medicines either treat lack of moisture or too much moisture, which is true today as well. Different types of skin ailments are either due to too much moisture, but they're treated by removing the moisture from whatever's there, and that enables the healing process to start, or by injecting moisture into the skin, which enables the healing process to start. Here, it was in conflict, because they were both, the whatever the boil was, it contained both too little moisture and too much moisture at the same time. And whatever medicine they would apply would only exacerbate the problem. It wouldn't make it any better. The Torah alludes to these boils later on. Let me find you the place. But later on, when Hashem is warning us Jews to make sure to keep from sinning, God forbid, because if a person sins, or if we as a people sin, God forbid, then there will be punishment. And one of the things that we're threatened with is Shechin Mitzrayim, the boils of Egypt. Let me show you that. To my knowledge, none of the other plagues are invoked specifically, again, in the Chumash anyway, as a threat. Of course, Makas Becharos, the death of the firstborn, is mentioned several times because we have many mitzvos that are based on the fact that Hashem killed their firstborn and didn't kill ours. But it's not said as a threat to the Jewish people. But here, they remembered these boils and the agony of the Egyptians, and therefore Hashem uses it as a threat to the Jews. Be careful, because you don't want me to do to you what I did to them. If you'll turn to I am on page 1080. I'm not sure if I have it exactly right yet. I'm still looking. Yeah, that's correct. It's on page 1080, 1080, and it is Pasuk Lamed Hey, verse 35. Oh, I'm sorry. There it does not say Shechin Mitzrayim. I'm sorry. There it just says Shechin, boils. Okay. Yeah, that's just as bad, evil boils. That doesn't actually mention Egypt. Let me look at one other place. It does say Egypt. It does say Shem Mitzrayim in another place. Just let me make sure I can.
Oh, it says a foul boil.
Right.
So it's more than just a boil.
Right. But it doesn't actually mention Egypt over there.
Oh, okay.
Right? But there is a place where it's going to actually mention Egypt.
By
yeah, that's what I'm looking now. Couldn't remember which one it was in. Okay, I'm sorry I don't have this. I should have looked it up before the class. That would have been saved some time now.
We'll take your word for it.
Well, but I want to show it to you now. The Gemara says, "Lo tihite shmiya gadol mireiya." Hearing shouldn't be as good as seeing. Seeing is believing. Give me another minute or two until we can locate it over here. See, if you were listening online, you could just skip this part.
Fast forward this part.
Oh, you know what? It's on page
1078. Oh, yes. It's not
that far. No, it's one page before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Pasuk Chav Zayin verse 27. Yakecha Hashem, Hashem will strike you b'shchin Mitzrayim, with the boils of Egypt. So the
wet boils
and dry boils.
Right, those are individual. Here it's both. So just the fact that it's invoked means that it's something that was in the consciousness of the Jewish people. Especially since these verses were said at the end of the 40 years in the wilderness. So this is not even the generation that were adults at the time of the plagues of Egypt. This is a generation that either were under 20 years old at that time, or even born later. But nevertheless, the stories of the plagues, the boils featured very prominently in those stories, and they were retold each year. And the boils of Egypt were considered to be a very, very painful experience, and therefore it is used here as a threat.
And it says, of wet boils and dry boils, of which you cannot be cured.
Right, right. They're incurable, at least, unless Hashem takes it away, but there's no medicine that was available that could heal them. So now, if we go back to page 334, and let's look a little more carefully at some of the psukim, some of the verses here. First of all, let's understand what it is that Moshe and Aaron did with this, the ashes. They took regular ashes out of an oven, and Moshe was to throw it up to the heavens, and it turned into dust. The dust settled over everything, and the dust turned into boils on people and on animals. The Gemara tells us that there were several miracles that went on over here, because Moshe and Aaron were to take two full handfuls. Each one were to fill up both their hands with the ashes, and then Moshe was to throw it to the sky. So, first of all, that means Moshe had to be able to hold what he could hold and what Aaron could hold, because Moshe had already had two full handfuls in his own hands of the ashes, and now Aaron was to pour his two handfuls into Moshe's two handfuls. So Moshe now had to hold all four handfuls, but Moshe only has two hands. Moreover, you can't throw something with any distance with two hands. This doesn't go that far. Well, if you want to throw something with distance, you need one hand to throw it with distance. Therefore, Chazal, our sages tell us, Moshe was using one hand to throw all four handfuls simultaneously. So it was miraculous in that he was able to hold in one hand all four handfuls, his two plus Aaron's two, and in one time throw all four handfuls. Now he threw it up into the heavens, and when it got up into the sky, it then turned into dust, and it spread out. It from the description of how the Torah says, and then how the Midrashim expand upon it. It sounds very similar to descriptions of a volcanic eruption, where, you know, the ash gets spewed directly up, and then it spreads out, and then everything just settles all over everything. It was everywhere. I guess our best analogy for here in Atlanta is pollen in a few weeks. It's like everywhere. You can't escape it. And that's what happened. This dust just settled, and it got all over everything. You couldn't get away from it. It settled, and it got into the homes, because it filtered through whatever ventilation systems they had, and it got into the stables, and it just got everywhere. It got into your clothing. It was just everywhere. Now the dust is just dust. It's just dirt. But when it touched skin, it turned into boils, which then erupted into blisters, and they were very, very painful. So that was also miraculous, because even though Moshe had one hand holding four handfuls, but nevertheless, four handfuls shouldn't cover all of Egypt. When he threw it up into the sky, it then proliferated and settled over the entire land of Egypt. So it became this like cloud that just settled down and infected everything. So I guess our first question has to be, why is this miracle necessary, that it be that Moshe's hands and Aaron's hands, handfuls, that they get condensed into the one handful of Moshe and he throws it? I mean, Hashem could have done the same miracle. If the four handfuls are anyway going to multiply into enough dust to cover all of Egypt, so Hashem could have done it with one handful as well. Could have just told Moshe, take a handful of ashes, throw it up to the sky, and I'll do the rest. So why does he need the miracle of the four handfuls being condensed into the one handful?
Well, you know, to me, it tells the people surrounding that Hashem has given Moses a special art in doing this, and that Hashem had given it to him and gives his, rather than Hashem doing it himself, gives Moses a position of grandeur.
Okay, so what you're suggesting is that it wasn't just that Moshe did something that any human being could do, which is to throw ashes into the heavens, but Moshe was able to do something no one else could do, and then Hashem built the miracle on top of that. But first, Moshe was able to do something no one else could do. So it elevates the status of Moshe even more than he already was.
Right.
Yes?
To me, I get the feeling that it corresponds, the four words corresponds to the Geula. It's beautiful. We read this a few psukim before.
Mm.
The four words.
Okay.
That's used, and Hashem took us out on the four words because it's shown us it's all the power of the Shparcha. Moshe was the servant of the Shparcha. Of course, it elevates him in the service, in Avodat Hashem, but shows the might of the Kaddish Baruch.
Okay, so you're using the number four, which we talked about before in the beginning of Parshas Va'era, the four languages, the four words of Geula, of redemption, which we're going to use that motif over and over again at the Seder for the same reason. Right. What's that?
The four cups of
wine. Four cups of wine, right? That's all right. That's so here, that number four comes up again, the four handfuls, to remind us of that idea as well.
Yeah, because it's saying that I, Hashem, took care of no one else. It says, no servant. I alone, Hashem, took care of Mitzrayim.
Okay, very good. Very good.
But then it seems like it's built into the natural process, into nature, which is Moshe started the compounding process from the natural, you know, it was not entirely natural because he had to go through all this in one hand, but however, starting the compounding process from a human standpoint, throwing it in Hashem, compounding it all over.
Okay,
so the human element is in there.
You're pointing out that what happened here is you had four handfuls, like condensed into one,
right.
And then when he threw it up into the heavens, then it expanded into much more than it was before.
Right.
But you already see, even before it reaches the sky, you already see that Hashem is miraculously manipulating the matter that it should be, that used to take up more space, now it takes up less space, and then all of a sudden okay.
As I recall, this is an example of something containing more than it should hold, right? And there are several famous examples.
Right,
Could you just go over those again, please?
Well, there are a few examples. I don't think that we've hit any of them yet. Parshas Noach is true, where the ark holds.
That's what I was thinking, is the ark was made a specific size, and yet it's still was a miracle in how much it held, but it had to be more believable than it being this size.
Right, so even though it was very large, it was a very large structure, but it was still not large enough to hold all those animals. So it was miraculous, but Hashem could have said, make it, you know, 4x4, and still could have done a miracle, but he wanted it to be somewhat natural.
It could have been one handful, yet he said four.
Right. We find what you're referring to is the phrase "machzik muat es hamaruba," where a small thing can hold a lot. So we're going to find that later on in the Chumash in a couple of places where Hashem has Moshe gather all the people into a very small area, and they're able to fit. We'll find that the Aron itself, the Ark, is able. It fits. It doesn't seem to take up any space. Right where the law of the laws of matter seem to not.
To be suspended.
So that's
the Mishkan carried the Levim.
Well, they see that Eretz Yisrael. Yerushalayim is called Eretz Tzvi.
The Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is called Eretz Tzvi. Right.
Because no matter, a deer skin is very very tight.
Right.
But it somehow manages to cover the deer. And no matter how many people come to Eretz Yisrael, it always seems that there's always room.
Right, it seems to expand and contract when it seems. What Chazal says, it seems to contract when we're not living there, and when we're living there, it expands. What they say is when you skin a deer, which I can't say I've ever seen a deer skinned, but when you skin a deer, apparently the hide immediately contracts. It shrinks because it's pulled very, very taut over the deer's body. And so if you look at the deer's skin after it's been skinned and you look at the flesh, it doesn't seem to be able to fit back on.
Yeah.
So it's called Eretz Tzvi, the land like a deer in that it can contract and expand. Right.
But we see the miracles when they did the avodah in you know, the Kohen Gadol would do the avodah on Yom Kippur, the way he had to take the coals with one hand, and that's all sorts of miracles itself.
Well, it wasn't a miracle. That was just very difficult to do. It was a very, very difficult thing to do. It was very complicated how he could manage to maneuver the different things he had to do all by himself, and at one time with only two hands, and he had four different things to take care of. So there is but it wasn't miraculous.
Okay.
There's another thing going on. Everything that was said is true, but there's another element here which needs to be emphasized, which is that Hashem wants Moshe and Aaron to take full handfuls, and then they are condensed into the one handful of Moshe, which means that Moshe is now holding in his hand that which came from both him and Aaron together. Hashem wants the plague to take place at the hand of Moshe, not the hand of Aaron. Aaron's not throwing anything to the heavens. He doesn't tell Moshe and Aaron, each of you throw ashes to the heavens. Aaron did the first three plagues with the stick, where he hit the water and he hit the dust. Here Moshe's doing it. He's the one throwing the ashes, not Aaron. But Aaron is still involved, because Aaron also picks up the ashes, hands them to Moshe, and then Moshe throws them. Apparently, this plague, Hashem wanted Moshe and Aaron both to be represented in the plague. In fact, the whole symbolism of taking that which is Moshe and Aaron, and it becomes one. It becomes that which was four handfuls, becomes one handful in the hand of Moshe. It seems that it's Moshe and Aaron combined, the power that which is represented by Moshe and Aaron, the strengths of Moshe and Aaron are combined into one handful of Moshe, and that's the schus, that's the merit that creates the plague. We know, we've talked about this before when we talked about the staff of Moshe and the staff of Aaron, that the staff of Moshe represents din, represents judgment, represents that a person and a nation has to toe the line, and then the staff of Aaron represents the rachamim, the mercy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we talked about in the first three plagues, and then after that, it seems that the makkah, the plague of Shechin, of the boils, requires both of the strengths of Moshe and Aaron here, being combined and thrown up to the heavens.
Is there any allusion to the fact that we have the kahuna and levium from them?
We have kahuna from Aaron.
Right.
Levium don't come from Moshe. Moshe is one of the levium.
Okay.
But levium come from Levi.
Levi.
Right. Torah comes from Moshe.
So, combination.
It's the combination of Torah and kahuna.
Kahuna.
That's the two things coming together over here. Right. The dust settles all over everybody, becomes very painful, and then we have a very curious pasuk. I'm skipping what there actually is another point I want to make, we'll come back to it. There's a very curious pasuk, Yud Aleph, verse 11. V'lo yachlu achar tumim la'amod lifnei Moshe mifnei Hashchin. The sorcerers could not stand in front of Moshe because of the boils. Someone who was reading the verses carefully would look up from this verse a little bit surprised. Sorcerers, where are they coming from? They haven't been mentioned. We haven't seen them since the plague of lice. And that's when they turned to Paro and they said to him, it's by Elohim He, it's the finger of God. They couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't mentioned at all in the plague of the wild animals. They weren't mentioned at all in the plague of the death of the livestock. And now all of a sudden, they couldn't stand before Moshe. When I first read this, when I first started thinking along these lines and read this, I was scratching my head like, what, that means they were standing in front of Moshe until now? They weren't able to copy him anymore. Already at the third plague, they were discredited. So why they? What do they have to do with anything over here? Not only that, but it appears that the fact that they couldn't stand before Moshe is why Hashem then had to strengthen the heart of Paro. Let's read the verses carefully. Yud Aleph and Yud Beis 11 and 12. V'lo yachlu achar tumim la'amod lifnei Moshe mipnei Hashchin. The sorcerers could not stand in front of Moshe because of the boils. Ki al yashchin b'achar tumim uv'chol Mitzrayim. Because the boils were on the sorcerers and on all of Egypt. V'yechazek Hashem eslev Paro. And Hashem strengthened the heart of Paro. It almost seems that Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, is the prelude to Pasuk Yud Beis, to verse 12, that for the first time, Hashem has to strengthen the heart of Paro. Tell now, Paro was able to strengthen his own heart, thank you very much. He was able to ignore all the pain and all the suffering. But now, he seems to have lost his confidence, and he's ready to give in, and Hashem has to strengthen his heart. It seems that that is a result of the sorcerers not being able to stand before Moshe. So what does that mean? So the thought that occurred to me, and later I found that the Ibn Ezra says a very similar idea, that although the sorcerers were no longer able to mimic what Moshe could do at the third plague, the first two they were able to copy, they were able to make the water turn to blood, they were able to bring up frogs, life they couldn't do. And they told Paro, this isn't sorcery, it's not magic anymore, this is to be something else, because we can't do it. But even though they couldn't do it, but they were still able to protect themselves from the plagues. They weren't affected by the lice. They were protected from the wild animals. They were able to cast spells or whatever type of magic they used in order at least to protect themselves. So even though they couldn't copy Moshe, but they were able to protect themselves from Moshe, which is at least a measure of a diminishing of what Hashem was doing. Because even though we can't do it, so it's coming from a greater power than ours, but we're able to at least keep it away from us.
We're able to protect.
It doesn't seem that way.
It
does not seem like they were able to protect Pharaoh.
But they were able to protect themselves.
It seems they were able to protect themselves. That's what it seems.
And not Pharaoh. Okay.
Then, with the boils, for the first time, they can't protect themselves. Not only can they not protect themselves, but this is said by several of the commentaries, at the end of Pasuk Yud Aleph, the end of 11, Ki haya shechin bachar tumim uvechol Mitzrayim, the boils afflicted the sorcerers and all of Egypt. It actually started with the sorcerers. When the dust started to settle over Egypt, it zeroed in first on the sorcerers, went straight for the sorcerers, for the Chartumim. They started screaming in agony, and then it hit everybody else. So not only were they unable to protect themselves, they actually went down first, and they were unable to stand before Moshe. So this was Hashem showing that, okay, no more Mr. Nice Guy, the game's over. Where this is it. Nobody's safe anymore. And he brought them to their knees. And because that now even the sorcerers couldn't protect themselves, and not only that, but they went down first, now Paro hardens his heart. Now Paro can't harden his own heart. Hashem has to harden Paro's heart for him.
Hashem is pretty much playing cat and mouse with the Chartumim.
That's correct. Hashem, another way to say it is this. Hashem left the Chartumim, let them be able to protect themselves in order that Paro could still hang his hat on something.
Uh-huh.
Paro could still deny God. Oh, you see, the Chartumim, they're still okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you see, it's not really from God, or God's not all-powerful. I never heard of God. Right? There's still, Paro has a way that he can still, he can still worm his way out of it. But once they go down, there's no defenses anymore. Nothing is safe. Nobody is safe. And there's nothing Paro can say. So at this point, Paro would have capitulated, but Hashem hardened his heart.
Did Paro have boils?
Yes, it seems. It seems. I mean, it doesn't say over here that Paro came to Moshe.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't say that. But we don't find Paro being an exception to any of the plagues except for the last one. The last one, the death of the firstborn, Paro is also a Bukhar. He's a firstborn. His own son dies, but he doesn't.
Right.
That's the one plague where we find Paro is made an exception. He's spared. And also with Kriyas Yamsuf, with the splitting of the sea, where everybody is drowned except Paro. So Paro is spared from the last two, although he witnesses it. But we don't find that he's spared anything else. No. From anything else.
I think he had the frogs.
Or yeah, I mean, he had the frogs for sure. Right? That says explicitly. Now, there's one more point to make before we go further. At least one more point that I want to make before we go further. And that is, I want to contrast two things over here. When Hashem mentions the ashes of an oven, so if you look at Pasuk Ches, verse 8, where it's first introduced, Hashem says to Moshe and to Aaron, take for yourselves melochaf nechem, full handfuls, piach kivshon, the ashes of an oven. I'm looking at the English to see how they say it here.
Furnace soot.
Furnace soot. Okay, soot of a furnace. If you look where, that's where Hashem tells Moshe Aaron to do it. If you look at the
second time,
Pasuk Yud, verse 10, it says, "Vaykuas piach hakivshon." He took soot of the furnace.
Mm-hmm.
First, it says furnace soot or soot of a furnace,
mm-hmm.
without the definite article, and then it says piach hakivshon. They took soot of the furnace.
Mm-hmm.
Now we know when the hay hayidia, when the definite article is used, it is referring either to an item that had been mentioned before,
mm-hmm.
or to an item, to something that is already well known. So if you say har, mountain, it can be any mountain. If you say ha-har, the mountain, you're either referring to the mountain that had been mentioned previously in that story, or to the mountain that everybody knows about. It's not just a mountain, it's the mountain, which would mean, let's say, Har Sinai, or the Temple Mount. You know, it's got to be something significant if it's going to be the mountain. So here, when it says with the oven, the furnace,
mm-hmm.
it would seem to be referring to a specific furnace. The term kivshon has not been mentioned in Parshas Va'era before. It has not been mentioned in Parshas Va'era. A kivshon, a furnace, has been alluded to in other places in the Chumash. But the term kivshon, what has not been used, I don't believe it's been used at all in the Chumash as of yet. It's been alluded to, but has not actually been used. Let me just double check one thing before I put my foot in my mouth. Hold on. Yeah. It has not, to my knowledge, it has not been mentioned yet in the Chumash. This is the first time that this word, kivshon, is used.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the, perhaps, the most famous use of the word kivshon?
Avraham.
Okay, Avraham was thrown into a kivshon ha'esh, a fiery furnace. That's when he destroyed the idols of his father, and Nimrod threw him into a kivshon ha'esh. That was, according to most commentaries, that was the first of Avraham's 10 tests. We know Avraham had 10 tests. There's a little bit of a debate how to count them, what gets counted and what doesn't get counted. Most of the commentaries say that's the first one.
Is that literally in the...
No, it is a Medrash. It's a Medrash. It's a Medrash. Although it's alluded to when Avraham, when he's trying to bargain Hashem down in destroying Sodom, trying to get him down that if you find 50 righteous people 40, tzaddikim 30, 20, all the way down to 10. So at one point, Avram says to Hashem, "Who am I to speak to you? V'anochi afar va'efer. I am dust and I am ashes." So the Gemara says, "What does it mean? I am dust and I am ashes. I am dust because I should have been killed in the war with the four kings. I would have been dust, and I should have been ashes because I should have been burnt into ashes in the furnace." So he's alluding to that which happened to him previously, but it is not mentioned explicitly in the Chumash. Right. But the phrase in the Medrash is Kibshan Ha'esh, fiery furnace. As with all the plagues, one can ask, why did Hashem bring boils against the Egyptians? What did they do that would make them deserve boils? So the most basic explanation that I saw is they would make the Jews work in the hot sun, and they would not allow the Jews to cool off. They would make them work under the beating down sun. The Jews would get sunburned. They would not be allowed to be in the shade to cool off. They would not be allowed to pour water over themselves to cool off, and they had to just bake in the sun, and their skin would burn. And it would become
blistered,
right? So as a midah k'neged midah, measure for measure, the Egyptians are now getting boils. In addition to that, some of the midrashim say that they enslaved a nation that comes from Avraham, who was willing to be thrown into the furnace. And as a result, they are going to get punished through the ashes of a furnace. See, although it's true that these ashes get spread out, they become dust, and they settle, but what is the, if it weren't miraculous, what's happening from the natural state of things, as was mentioned before, when Hashem performs a miracle, he wants it to be as close to the natural order as possible, to diminish just how far outside the realm of nature he's going. The two greatest miracles that ever happened, the ones that were totally out of the realm of nature, the greatest one was Kabbalah HaTorah, was the receiving of the Torah, and the second greatest was Kriyas Yamsuf, was the splitting of the sea. Those two are totally out of the realm of nature. But these still kept within some parameters of nature, even though they were miraculous, but they were in some measure still somewhat similar to the way the natural order works. The similarity here would be if there were hot ashes that, God forbid, hit a person's skin, the skin would burn and it would erupt into boils and blisters. That's the natural order of what's happening over here. And of course, it's miraculous because, first of all, it's way more than what Moshe and Aaron took, because it's all over the heavens and all over Egypt. But more than that, Moshe's picking it up with his bare hands, as is Aaron, so which means that either they had already cooled off, or Moshe and Aaron were miraculously able to hold them and not get burned, and then he throws them up to the heavens. And even there, if you take ashes that are hot, and you throw them up to the sky, and they spread out and settle, you would imagine by the time they come down, they're not going to be so hot anymore, especially if they spread out. So clearly there's miracles going on over here. But the closest thing to the natural order is that it's hot ashes burning the skin of the people and the animals. So that is because, according to the Medrash, because they enslaved a nation that comes from the person, Avraham, who was willing to get thrown into that furnace and become those ashes. He was willing to go through that for the sake of Hashem. So they're getting punished with those ashes. It could be, I didn't see anybody discuss it explicitly, but it could be that's why the hay, the word the, is used. Piach ha-kibshan, the ashes of the furnace. I don't mean to suggest that this is the same furnace that Avraham was thrown into. Geographically, it doesn't work out. Avraham was thrown into a furnace in Ur Kasdim, which is in Babel, in Babylonia, which is in present-day Iraq, and this is taking place in Egypt. It's very unlikely that the same furnace was transported to Egypt, although who knows, you can find anything in Medrash. So I don't, you know, but I'm not familiar with any such thing. But it could be that the Torah wants to invoke the kibshan, the furnace, So we'll think about that furnace that Avram was thrown into. Yes?
Is there any relationship between Avram Avinu throwing dust after the...
That's interesting. What Chani's bringing up is that in the war with the four kings, there was a miracle, which the Gemara itself says resulted in a story later on, where Avraham and his servants, or servants, depending on how many people were there with him, were able to pick up dust and throw the dust at the enemy, and the dust would turn into arrows and spears and daggers and like that. But that was dust of the ground, This is from the furnace. Now, it could be there is some sort of similarity, but it's not exactly the same thing.
Right.
And then also, Avraham and his son, Yitzchak, isn't it some symbolism also about the ashes of Yitzchak?
Yeah, because Yitzchak should have been slaughtered, and then he would have been, after he would have been slaughtered, he would have been burned on the altar, because that's what you do with an ola, with a completely burnt offering. The difference is, though, that he would not have been killed through that. Avraham would have been killed through the fire, had he not been miraculously saved. Yeah.
Well, I just realized that it really pointed up the fact that neither Moshe nor Aaron got boils from handling the same ashes.
Right.
It makes it very significant that they picked it up with their bare hands, that it was not affected through the use of a staff or any other intermediate object. They literally came into contact with the very same ashes that in the form of fine dust, you know.
Okay, that's very good. We should emphasize that point. It's a very good point. This is the first plague that is being brought about directly by direct contact. Even though we did have earlier when Moshe is told to perform some signs in front of the Jewish people to show them that Hashem had sent him. Mm-hmm. So Hashem says, throw down your staff, it'll turn into a snake. Okay. And then he sticks his hand in his shirt and turns it into us. And then he's supposed to pick up water and throw it down on the ground and turn into blood. But that wasn't one of the plagues. That was to show the Jews that Hashem had actually appeared to Moshe. The plague so far, if there has been any action on the part of Moshe or Aaron, it's been with the staff. Here it is direct contact. That's a very good point. Worthwhile emphasizing. Yes.
I mean, this is going far out, but maybe it's the same oven that the piece of coal, the hot coal came out that burned Moshe's tongue.
Okay.
And so maybe Moshe somehow had familiarity with that oven and that coal and that...
All right. I don't think it's so far fetched. It's you never know with these things. Whenever you find this hay, it's something, and it could be. You never know. I like that suggestion. Yeah.
Could also be referring to the hay, emphasizing Abraham, because it was the original promise that Hashem made to Abraham that he told them that the Jews were going to be slaves in a foreign land, and this is just connecting that Masala that which he told Abraham, which is being fulfilled now.
Is he saying the reason why we want to draw attention to Abraham is because this is the fulfillment of what was said to Abraham?
Right.
Okay, very good, very good.
So, Rabbi, I'm going to set the stage now. I'm a little confused.
Yeah.
Moshe picks up dirt, or he picks up ash.
Ashes.
He picks up ashes, and the ashes is from the ground.
No, from the oven.
From whose oven?
Well, it doesn't say that.
I think it's one of whose oven.
That's what we don't know.
The oven.
Okay. Yeah.
It's interesting that in this plague, it doesn't say that the boils did not affect the Jewish people.
Right.
And all the others, it does say that, although I think we assume that.
No, it did not affect the Jewish people. It does not emphasize it over here. It didn't say with the plague of blood or of frogs, that it did not affect the Jewish people. The frogs, one second, the frogs it did not say.
The blood, I thought it did.
The blood might have said, you're probably right. Let me just see, hold on. Yeah, no, I don't think it says specifically that it didn't affect the Jewish, but we know that it didn't. none of the plagues affected the Jews. The where it said it explicitly were with the wild animals and the livestock, especially the livestock, where Paro even sent to find out whether any Jewish owned livestock had died.
And they didn't,
right. Right. So it doesn't always emphasize that point, but it's true the Jews were not affected by it.
So the boils were on man. Oh, wait, it was man and beast. Okay.
Man and beast. Yeah. So the seventh plague is the plague of Barad, of hail. The most significant thing about this plague is that it's going to go on for 2 pages. This is the longest plague. All the plagues are just one paragraph, or maybe the warning is a paragraph and then it actually happens another paragraph. At most, 3 paragraphs. Here you've got a lot of ink used for this one plague. Perhaps you can say that the plague the death of the firstborn, but there's a lot of other stuff going on. Because the death of the firstborn, you have the whole thing with the Pesach sacrifice, and getting the gold and silver from the Egyptians. And there's a lot going on besides just the plague itself. But in terms of we're just focusing on the plague, here we're going to have a whole to-do about the barad, about the hail. In certain ways, it appears that the hail was the most significant of all the plagues. Now, we know that, of course, the death of the firstborn is the one that we went free because of. And that's the one that actually, that was the end of it.
Well, we've said that for each one.
What's that?
We've said that.
No, I don't think we've said it for each one. It's the most significant.
Almost.
Really?
The lice was like, it was...
No, up until that point. No, but of all of them...
That.
Yeah, of all of them, the hail seems to... We did say the death of the livestock at that point was the most terrifying because it was death.
Right.
Nothing else was just death. Everything else was death happened because of them, but it wasn't just death. The livestock was very scary because if you can do it to animals, you can do it to people.
Right.
But here... you can have there's fear there was no fear before or during the death of the livestock. It was afterwards when you think about what just happened. That was terrifying, but the sheer fear of the plague while it's happening, this is the hail is going to top everything else, as we're going to see.
The hail destroys everything.
Okay.
There's no avoiding it.
Okay, and that's the other thing. What's that?
Especially your car.
Roofs. The hail is also going to be the most destructive plague.
Right.
If they're going to assess in terms of insurance claims after each of the plagues, the hail will have the largest of all of the plagues.
Can I just ask one question about the death of the animals? Were all the animals, did they all die during that plague?
It was all the animals that were outside.
Oh.
All the animals that were outside.
Yeah.
Because as we're going to, there were animals still alive for the boils.
Yeah. Right.
There are animals still alive for the hail.
Yeah.
Right? There's still going to be animals alive.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll begin reading. We're not going to finish all this evening. And we usually read through the entire plague and then talk about it. Here we're going to have to break it up into sections. Just so much here. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Pasuk 13. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Hashkem baboker, get up early in the morning, v'yisyaseh v'yisnei Pharaoh, and stand before Pharaoh. So Amar Shal Elov, and you shall say to him, Komar Hashem Elokeho Yivrim, so says God, the Hashem, the God of the Jews, Shalach Asami v'yavduni, stand up my nation, and they will serve me. Kiba pamazos, because this time, ani shaleach, I am sending es kol magefosai el libcha, all of my plagues against your heart. Uva avodecha, uva amecha, and against your servants, and against your nation. Bavor teida, so that you shall know, ki ein kamoni b'chol haaretz, there is nothing like me in all of the land. So I'm sending it all. Right now, I'm just unleashing everything against you. Ki ato shalach mi es yadi. For now, I could send my hand, if I chose, Va'ach oscha ve'samcha badavar. And I could strike you and your nation with a plague, with meaning a plague of death. I could send against you a sickness that would kill you. Vatikached min haaretz. And you would be, okay, that's a good word, obliterated from the earth. Ve'ulam, however, ba'avur zo se'emadeticha, for this reason I have let you live. Ba'avur haroscha es kochi, in order to show you my strength. Uleman sa'per shemi b'chol ha'aretz, and so my name shall be told, shall be spoken about in all of the land.
If you deny Hashem.
Right. So Hashem, this is a very wordy warning. Hashem says, let them go. And if you're not going to let them go, and of course Hashem knows he's not going to let them go, because Hashem is hard in his heart. So he says, if you don't let them go, this time, I'm letting it all out against you. I'm opening up the whatever forces I have, and I'm just unleashing them against you. Everything.
Did Moshe and Aharon have free entry? Isn't that the way it's described? You go before Apharah. It's like they can come and go.
At this point, no one was going to stop them. Yeah, they were pretty. People were pretty afraid of them at this point. Yeah. They were not. No one trifled with them anymore. Yeah. So they. So I'm going to send everything against you. In order that you should know that there's nothing like me. And then Hashem, it's very wordy. Then Hashem says, because, you know, by the way, if I really felt like it, I could kill you like that. I could just send a death against you and all of your nation, and you're finished. Just like I did with the animals. I could wipe you out right now. I could obliterate you. The only reason why I'm not doing that is because that you should know my strength, to show you my strength, and in order that my name be spoken about in all the land. So the plague of the hail is going to severely damage the food stores, but it will not create a total famine. The locusts are going to create a total famine. That's why the locusts, in a certain way, are worse than this. But in terms of damage, this is the most damaging one. This is the most damaging one. But the total famine will set in with the locusts.
Yeah, this is being put in human words. I will show you you're not a deity. But Hashem doesn't have to prove his name anywhere.
No, it's true, he doesn't have to. But remember that the goal of all of creation is that mankind and the world at large should recognize Hashem and serve Hashem. Now, it's done through us. We're the ones who are supposed to lead everyone in doing that. But that's the entire goal. So when there's denial of Hashem, that is going counter to what the whole goal of creation is in the first place.
But also because Pharaoh thought himself as a deity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's something, why does it use the word in Pasuk Yedaleh El Libcha?
I'm not sure. That's a good question. I noticed that as I was reading it this time.
Is that because Hashem hardened his heart?
It could be. But even that, we don't fully grasp why the word heart is used. Harden his heart.
Yeah.
I mean, he hardened his brain. He didn't let him make a decision to let the Jews go. But the word heart is used. So, you know, I think we think of that more because your heart is where you would have compassion. And Hashem is hardening his heart. He won't have compassion. So. I'm not sure why it emphasizes the heart over here. Why a plague of hail? So here.
Yeah, we're not tornadoes. We can tell you that. Lately.
So here we have a similar point to what was made before, which is that the Egyptians did not allow the Jews to have adequate shelter. They didn't allow them to live in housing where the roof was secure. It didn't rain in Egypt. There was no rain in Egypt, but they didn't have adequate protection against the cold or against the heat. It was a very shabby type of housing that they had to live in. And here Hashem brings the plague of hail, which just destroys the buildings. Everything gets damaged. The cars, as you said, get all the hail damage. So there's widespread damage over here because of the hail.
So another media connected made them.
Yeah. That's one of the things that said. There's more, of course. There's always more of these sorts of things. But that's now We have to stop. So we're going to pick up next week from Pasuk Yud Zayin 17. It's a convenient place to stop because that's where we stop when we read it on Shabbos. This is where the Aliyah ends. We may go back a little bit and talk about the ones we just read, but primarily we're going to stop in there. Now, again, it's not next week. Just for those who read it, it's in 2 weeks' time. 2 weeks' time on March the 18th is our next class.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.